We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all, I'm talking about Alabama. I mean to say, this show goes like, way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, we're going to do this Dipper a little different, all right? A lot of times I spend most of my time rattling paper and talking, but I think this one, we need to actually have some audio clips mixed in. So, Big Rig, brace yourself, brother. I'll be calling for audios here momentarily. But listen, last night, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz did their first interview. And they were treated somewhat deferentially by CNN's Dana Bash, who, by the way, went hard after J.D. Vance when she interviewed him. Follow-up questions, but don't you mean, why don't you think? And yet with them, I mean, at one point, Kamala was even able to say, next question. Like she was done, and Dana just said, okay. So did she press on a few things? Yeah, and good, because I think her credibility would have been shot if she had not. But all said and done, here's the thing. Let me give you the rundown on this. Did she destroy herself? No. Did she help herself? No. It was kind of in the middle. All right, if you were looking at it, first of all, let's just talk about the optics. Let's talk about the fact that optics mean something, and that right now the imagery and the video clips of Kamala Harris being interviewed by Dana Bash is going out like every 10 seconds on social media. It's being replayed over and over again on news cycles. Somebody please fire her PR staff who don't know what they're doing. Because if you watch it, you will see that the room was dimly lit, somewhat downcast, really, like kind of gray neutral colors. She was wearing a dark gray outfit, like almost to the point of like, is she in mourning? And the way they had her sitting, put her at the backside of a table that made her look like she was at the kiddie table compared to, for some reason, the angles had Dana Bash and Tim Walz looking like they were monsters by comparison. Like she's back there somehow looking small. That is not the look she needed. She needed something that was bright, something that showed energy, and instead they dressed her dour in Mama's pantsuit and put her on a dark stage and in a position where she looked like she was little bitty and really got treated like she was little bitty in some ways. Tim Walz, on the other hand, who was there to be the emotional, you know, support candidate, he didn't talk much. He just sat there and nodded his head. Now, I will be the first to admit that there have been times in the past when both Republicans and Democrats did joint interviews with President, Vice President. This is not the first. But this is the first in which everybody was concerned whether or not she's able to answer questions on her own. Can she stand on her own two feet? Will she be able to keep a coherent conversation going? She's not got a good history of being able to do that when she's standing alone. And so they brought in the VP, and you're thinking, man, if you want to beat back, without having to say you are, if you want to beat back all of those naysayers about her ability to converse and to appear dynamic and strong, you missed it. So there's that. Optics were terrible. Optics were bad. Now, what about the content of her questions, questions and answers? There were times when there were word salads, and there were times when there were not, and there were times when I just disagree with the point she makes because I'm a conservative and she's obviously not. There were other times I thought she did a really bad job, like so avoiding the question or contradicting herself in the middle of an answer, or desperately trying to find words to fill space, that it just didn't resonate. If you love Kamala, you're relieved, but you're not overjoyed. If you can't stand Kamala, you're like, meh, but you're not sitting there worried now at all because she didn't do anything to make her. So here's the thing. The press has shifted immediately. I don't know the details, but apparently President Trump said something today that's got some people, you know, completely up in arms about whether he is truly pro-life. That's all the news cycle now. Well, President Trump may be softening on abortion. Listen, all they're doing there is trying to deflect from the fact that she does not have good policy. And if any of you are out there going, well, I just don't know that I can give Trump my vote now. Guys, I just don't know that he's strong enough on abortion. Shut up. Listen to yourself for a second. For the love, do you think you're better off with Kamala Harris? Because her policy is abortion on demand. Her policy is literally, let's pay for abortion. Let's have insurance pay for it. Her policy is, let's go ahead and make sure that abortion is written into a statutory obligation of every state and take it away from the states to say, we're going to be pro-life in Alabama or wherever. So just stop fooling yourself with what they're doing right now with the media talking points. They know she did not resonate last night. And so they're concerned enough to where they're trying to shift the news cycle because they don't want her constant, well, what we're about to do, they don't want her commentary becoming a thing. So let's do this. I tell you what, Big Rig, let's you got those in order, right? I got 1 through 5 on this one. So I'm gonna go out of order, all right? I'm gonna call for 3. This is the one on Tim Walz. Let's get Tim Walz out of the way first. So Tim Walz was asked the question about stolen valor. Dana Bash asked the question about the fact that he said he carried weapons in a war zone when he didn't. Let's play Tim Walz and then let me break it down for a minute. Let's get that out of the way. Go ahead.
To get to know you, I want to ask you a question about how you've described your service in the National Guard. You said that you carried weapons in war, but you have never deployed actually in a war zone. A campaign official said that you misspoke. Did you?
Well, first of all, I'm incredibly proud. I've done 24 years of wearing the uniform of this country. Equally proud of my service in a public school classroom, whether it's Congress or the governor. My record speaks for itself, but I think people are coming to get to know me. I speak like they do. I speak candidly. I wear my emotions on my sleeves, and I speak especially passionately about our children being shot in schools and around guns. So I think people know me. They know who I am. They know where my heart is. And again, my record has been out there for over 40 years to speak for itself.
And the idea that you said that you were in war, yeah. Did you misspeak, as the campaign has said?
Yeah, I said we were talking about, in this case, this was after a school shooting, the ideas of carrying these weapons of war. And my wife, the English, you told me my grammar's not always correct. But again, if it's not this, it's an attack on my children for showing love for me, or it's an attack on my dog. I'm not going to do that. And the one thing I'll never do is I'll never demean another member's service in any way. I never have, and I never will.
Okay. Let me just point something out. They've known for weeks this interview was coming. They've known since the very first time someone issued the statement on social media, which became a news cycle story about questions of his military service being embellished, that this was going to be something he would have to answer to somebody. He avoided it for a month, which meant that he had a month to get his act together. And that was not what I would call a very artful answer. I mean, let's talk about it. He's proud of his 24 years. I'm glad. You should be. And you should have left it at that. I'm proud of my 24 years. I don't know why those words came out of my mouth. I wish that I had corrected it. But he didn't do that. Instead, what he shifted to was, and I'm equally proud of being a classroom teacher, a.k.a., hey, teachers union, don't forget me. Here I am throwing that in there as a bone for you. And then he gets into, I think everybody's getting to know me. They know I speak like they do. What does that even mean? I'm not sure why he would go down that road, because the question was not about how he speaks, but what he speaks. And people don't, generally speaking, claim to have gone to war when they didn't. Now, in the heat of a moment, did he say something that he wishes he hadn't said? That happens. He's also had years to correct the record, and he has chosen not to. That's the problem here. The problem is not, oops, I shouldn't have said it that way. Because if you do that, you go back and go, I want to make sure I don't want to portray something that's not true. When I said it this way, I was in the heat of the moment. It was not very artful. I should have said. He didn't do that, though. And now here we are, years later, and he's hiding behind, well, I was really worried about children being shot, and that's what happened. That's what caused it. And then it's bad grammar. No, sir, it's not grammar. I realize Democrats don't understand grammar because they want to change pronouns all the time and things like that, but it's not grammar. It's not. It's called a misstatement. It's called saying something that's not true. If you say it the first time and you didn't mean it and you correct it, it's a misstatement that you've just corrected the record on. If you let it linger knowingly, it becomes a lie. And that's where you are. So Tim Walz didn't really help himself on the stolen valor thing. He tried to pretend he did. But whoever his people are getting ready for that one did a pretty poor job of finding the right words. All right, so let's keep doing this. I want to break this down. Do I have time? Let's see. I'll tell you what. We're going to come back from this break, and I got several more clips. We're going to talk about why Harris says she has no regrets of telling the world that Biden was still okay, but she was quick to jump into the seat when he was no longer okay. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades as the scorpions bring us back into this segment. So let me do this. Big Rig, go ahead. Get ready on audio clip number one, if you would, please. This is the one about Harris saying she has no regrets. So there was a question that was asked, and I'm so glad it was, about the fact that it wasn't so long ago that Kamala Harris was telling the world that Joe Biden's sharp as a tack. She's proud to serve with him. He's fine. There's no problems. And then all of a sudden he was kicked out and she was fine, was stepping into a seat. There's no problems. He's still the president. She hasn't called for, you know, the invoking of articles to have him removed from office. But nonetheless, let's hear what she had to say there. Big Rig, audio clip number one. Brother, go ahead and play it.
Yes, you were a very staunch defender of President Biden's capacity to serve another 4 years. Right after the debate, you insisted that President Biden is extraordinarily strong. Given where we are now, do you have any regrets about what you told the American people?
No, not at all. Not at all. I have served with President Biden for almost 4 years now, and I'll tell you, it's one of the greatest honors of my career, truly. He cares so deeply about the American people. He is so smart and loyal to the American people. And I have spent hours upon hours with him, be it in the Oval Office or the Situation Room. He has the intelligence, the commitment, and the judgment and disposition that I think the American people rightly deserve in their president.
Vice President
wow.
Harris.
Okay, let's stop it right there. All right, let's break that down a little bit. I have to call bunk on that. First of all, let's talk about some body language and some voicing, all right? Do you hear her voice? When she talks on things she's less comfortable with, or, I mean, listen, don't play poker, Kamala. Don't. You got too many tails. When she starts talking, do you notice her voice gets more like this when she's on something that's uncomfortable? Uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. I mean, that's what she's doing. It just sounded like, let me talk about a thing that I'm not kind of talking about. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it. I am. I'm going to talk about it. That's what she's doing. All right. Said that he was extra strong, Joe Biden. I asked if she had any regrets for sticking up for him. Listen, if she was absolutely 100% assured that Joe Biden was the man, then she would have been there defending him when her own party leadership was saying, Kamala, you got to step in. No, Joe's the man we deserve, she said. Joe has the disposition and the intellect and the drive. He's the man we deserve. She says that now, but she's still sitting in his seat, isn't she? A little hard to swallow, just saying, smudgy voice, talking about not having any regrets, and yet there she is, filling his seat, knowing full well that she didn't stick up for him the way she claims to be smudgy voice sticking up for him right now, just saying. All right, that's enough of that one. I call bunk on that. Now, let's go to the border. Clip number two, Big Rig. Let's see if we can get this in before the break. Clip number two. I mean, there's a top two issues before the voters right now. All the polls say the top two issues are the economy and the border. Let's talk about the border. Clip two, play it.
In the Biden-Harris administration, there were record numbers of illegal border crossings. Why did the Biden-Harris administration wait 3.5 years to implement sweeping asylum restrictions?
Well, first of all, the root causes work that I did as vice president that I was asked to do by the president has actually resulted in a number of benefits, including historic investments by American businesses in that region. The number of immigrants coming from that region has actually reduced since we began that work. But I will say this, that Joe Biden and I and our administration worked with members of the United States Congress on an immigration issue that is very significant to the American people and to our security, which is the border. And through bipartisan work, including some of the most conservative members of the United States Congress, a bill was crafted, which we supported, which I support. And Donald Trump got word of this bill that would have contributed to securing our border. And because he believes that it would not have helped him politically, he told his folks in Congress, don't put it forward. He killed the bill. A border security bill that would have put 1,500 more agents on the border. And let me tell you something, the Border Patrol endorsed the bill. And I'm sure in large part because they knew they were working around the clock and 1,500 more agents would help them. That bill would have allowed us to increase seizures of fentanyl.
Listen, so again, if you love Kamala Harris, she's doing okay. If you're a conservative, you're looking at this, you're going, stop it. Because what she just did is said, I've been in office for almost 4 years, but it's Trump's fault. That's what she just did. I've been in office 4 years, but Trump has so much influence in D.C., I can't get my job done as the vice president. And Joe Biden can't get his job done as the president because the real force in D.C., all of D.C., is Donald Trump, who's not even in office. That's what she's saying. This is ludicrous. This is like her saying, I don't have near enough strength like my opponent does. That's what you just heard. I don't have the ability to get things done because of the guy I'm running against. Well, apparently he gets things done, you're saying. He basically just picks up a phone, says, don't pass that bill. And they all go, Roger that. Stop it. This is silly. And by the way, the whole thing about, well, I was appointed to go and do things to help bring investments to those regions. Can I call crap on that again, too, please? We're not worried about whether you got some investment in Venezuela that was then reclaimed by the, you know, socialist government. What we're worried about is what's happening here in the United States. And she's taking no ownership in this. She took no ownership whatsoever over the actual question, which was massive record-setting numbers of illegals crossing our border during your tenure. Her only answer? Blame Trump. Can I remind her, by the way, they actually had Congress when she first got elected? Like, if she'd wanted this, go for it. You had everything. You passed the Inflation Reduction Act. You passed the CHIPS Act. You passed, how many big spending bills? And then all of a sudden, when you're staring at an election, you come up with an idea for something you know is not going to pass because it's filled with other pork and things that don't make sense. And the conservatives in Congress said, we're not doing that. We've got another bill we already passed and you won't pass it. Why won't you pass ours? Oh, because it's ours. So she blamed Trump for the border. You'll be happy to know, though, there are investments in South America that are helping somebody, I guess, she says. She didn't bother saying who they are. Never mind the fact that we've got, you know, whole sections of the United States on high alert. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. More of this. We'll have Scott Buttram coming on from the Trustful Tribune momentarily. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studio. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on this Friday. So we're talking through this interview that was given last night. And like I said, I'll be honest, if you love Kamala, you're somewhat relieved, but you're not overjoyed. And if you can't stand Kamala, you're like, wow, meh, but you're not sitting there, you know, just thinking that she just like had another one of those Biden collapse at the debate moments. But let's talk with somebody else who's got some opinions. He's pretty good at registering his opinions. That may be my friend Scott Buttram, who is the publisher of the much-vaunted Trustful Tribune. Scotticus, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, my brother. How are you today?
I'm good. Are you ready for True Football Weekend to kick off?
You have no idea how ready I am. I'm a little disappointed, you know, to open the season with Weeping Sisters of the Poor. But I prefer a big game to open the year, but I'm just ready to see our guys play.
Well, listen, all the talk about the brand spanking new version of the SEC and everything else, we'll see how it goes. All I know is I'm an Auburn fan, and we're opening with Alabama A&M, so whoop, we'll see what happens.
Hey, Phil, as Alabama and Auburn fans, we've watched them come and go for decades, man.
it's like politics. It all goes in cycles.
That's right.
Well, speaking of politics, my man, let's talk about last night's interview with Kamala. I know you've seen it, and give me your upfront impressions before I poison the well too much. What are you thinking?
Well, and you know, I don't like to get in too much to the personal side of it, because I really think staying focused on the substance of that interview and what she had to say is the key. But the first thing that struck me was she looked haggard. She looked physically tired to me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why, because this has been pretty much the biggest do-nothing campaign I've ever seen. I mean, show up, read from a teleprompter, get in the call without talking to anybody. But she really did look physically worn down to me already.
I noticed that. Part of it, I think, was bad lighting. And the other part was, I think she's just very tired. I mean, she looked like she had aged in the last few weeks.
She did to me, too. She came across to me, it was apparent to me that she was very well rehearsed on the answers that she was given, and that they had really planned for her to avoid policy definitive statements, which she did. But what she alluded to was she hasn't changed her views on anything.
Yeah.
She's trying to play the game with fracking. If the people of Pennsylvania buy that, they deserve everything that happens to their industry.
Well, listen, in fact, somewhere in the mix there, I think it was in that same piece of the discussion about fracking and all of it, she made the statement, "My values have not changed." She was asked why she had some changes in her policy positions. She said, "My values have not changed." And my thought was, wait a minute. What you just said was, you don't base your policy positions upon principle. You base upon whatever's needed at the time. And that's not what we need in a president.
That's correct. And she doubled down on her commitment to the Green New Deal, just to remind our listeners, and I think your listeners are probably some of the most educated in Alabama, but just as a refresher course, folks, the commitment to the Green New Deal by the Biden administration is exactly what jacked up your gas prices.
Oh, man.
It was the key to everything. Once fuel cost goes up, that triggered everything else in inflation that we're living with on a daily basis every time we gas up our car and every time we go to the grocery store. So she sat there and said to America, "I'm sorry you're suffering." Actually, she didn't say, "I'm sorry." She just said, "I know you're suffering. Screw you. I'm sticking with the Green New Deal."
Yeah. And then there's border. I've got a story here. This next came from Yellowhammer News, but Senator Katie Britt from Alabama is talking about the fact that apparently Axios has reported this week that Kamala Harris pledges now to spend hundreds of millions of dollars building a wall on the southern border. And Katie Britt's response was, she's going to be wearing a MAGA hat in her next ad.
I mean, you know, I've been watching this entire campaign since she was hand chosen as the Democrat nominee. And it has been comical. She is literally running as Donald Trump while saying the country doesn't need Donald Trump again.
Yeah, she also said at one point, and we haven't even gotten to this clip yet, and I've been playing clips since before you came on, but there's one place in there where she basically says it's time to turn the page on the last decade. Never mind the fact that in the last decade, she's been the vice president for a third of that time.
Well, and all the things she plans to fix on day one that she broke on her last day one, that's been kind of comical. I'm just waiting on one of these interviewers, and we're not going to see it, to say, "Vice President, why didn't you do it on day one in 2020? We've been, you know, our citizens have been struggling to make ends meet. They're putting necessities on their credit card to get to the end of the month. If you can fix it on January 2025, day one, why couldn't you fix it January 2020, day one, when you're actually the one who broke it.
Yeah, or for that matter, if you can fix it then, just go ahead and fix it now, please. Why wait? Run on a success. Right. Don't run on a could be. Run on a did.
That's it. And I think it was you or somebody posted earlier, maybe it was Jay Town, I saw him on social media, that tweeted out that she thinks you're stupid. She thinks we're all stupid. I don't know how insulting that is to Democrat voters, but I think it's going to be pretty insulting to the moderate voters, the independent voters.
I think
that's who they both candidates should be watching, because that's going to be who decides it. It's going to be the independent voters in the middle. I don't think they're buying the Democrats' story. I don't think they're buying it.
I don't either, and I think that the polls are starting to reflect that. There's a most recent poll, I think it was a Fox poll, that said that Trump has pulled back ahead again. But there's no doubt it's a close race. I mean, I'm not trying to say we've got this. I mean, let's run like scalded dogs all the way to the time this is done.
You better know it.
But let me ask you something. You just said you think that you know, of course, we do have a very intelligent audience. Thank you very much. And you also made mention of whether or not there are people out there that are buying what she's selling. What do you think about those who are already in love with her and desperate to find, you know, some hope in her candidacy since they just got rid of Biden? Did they love last night's interview? Because I'll be honest with you and I are both conservative Republicans. We can pick it apart all day long. How about the people who are her fans? Did they have anything to love in there?
I think they're already encouraged because she's not Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And the sycophants are not going anywhere. They're going to support the liberal cause through thick and thin. It doesn't really matter what it does to them or does to the country or does to their neighbors. They're committed to that liberal cause. So they're going to be unswayed. Here's my concern. When Biden was at the top of the ticket, I think a lot of those people, and I don't think, first of all, I don't think any of them would have crossed over and voted for Trump under any circumstances.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of them may have stayed home. I do think Kamala Harris is being at the head of the ticket is more encouraging to those people that may have stayed home to get out and vote. We've got to be aware of that. And as you said, Trump can't take this for granted. No. He's going to win it. That's my opinion. But he has to fight every day like it's his last. He's got to take it. He's got to take it all the way to the final horn. I think he will do that. The other thing he's got to do is not let himself get drawn into the petty stuff.
Yeah.
Zeroed in on what Americans are facing every day. You got to fill up your gas tank every single week. You got to buy groceries and feed your family every single week. That is what Donald Trump needs to stay focused on. And if he does, then he's going to be in good shape. But if he starts moving off track, he opens the door for her.
Yeah. And I'm going to policy Trump. Policy Trump is always the better version. I mean, policy Trump always does better than mean tweet Trump.
And Trump is not going to be swayed by liberal pundits yelling about him picking on Kamala Harris. He'll keep right on doing it. It's got to be the Trump supporters that help keep him on track.
Yeah.
He's got to hear it from his own people. And I'm talking not his handlers. I'm talking about rank-and-file voters out there. When they see him veer off and go to the petty stuff, he needs to hear from them. Come back to the policy. Win this thing.
Yeah.
And if he does that, I think he's going to win it, because people, Americans, are being punched in the face every single week when they stop at a gas station and buy groceries. He's got to keep them focused on that, and they don't want that anymore.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I also think that the border is a close second to the economy right now, especially with all the things we're seeing about crime and everything else related to illegal immigrants. Hey, let me ask you this. One more quick question. We got about a minute and a half left. Back on the interview again, I thought it was interesting that it was pre-recorded, edited, and only lasted 18 minutes. Makes you wonder what they did cut out.
It was nothing. Phil, that was the biggest disappointment. Probably the highlight of the interview was Dana Bash just gushing over sitting in front of Kamala Harris. There was no interest. As I watched it, I kept waiting for something that would mean something. And she is the queen of talking without saying anything.
Yeah.
So that's ultimately all we got. I don't think we're going to see anything more drawn out from her until the debate. And I hope whoever is preparing Donald Trump is really good at this, because if he's properly prepared, he can pull a lot of this out of her. But if I'm preparing him, I'm using her old audio clips when she stated her position, and I'm hammering her with it all night long.
I'm saying. All right. Well, listen, I knew you'd have commentary, and you did. You did not disappoint. My friend Scott, thank you so much for your time. Trustful Tribune's where they can find you, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate you, man.
See you now. That's Scott Buttram, the publisher of the Trustful Tribune. And by the way, one of my my op-ed runs in the Trustful Tribune every Tuesday, as a matter of fact. So, all right, Big Rig, take it to a break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back. I got another clip you're going to want to hear. What did she say about Bidenomics? Was it successful? Wow. Okay. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, giving you all the truth to put on a bumper sticker. So I got a bunch of text messages. I'll be jumping on those here momentarily. Let's do this, though. We're going to wrap up our discussion about, you know, old Kamala, new Kamala. So it's a little bit galling when someone is running, and in a sense, she's running for re-election. That's what's happening. Now, she's running for a different seat, but she's still running for re-election. She's the vice president running for the presidency now. And yet the questions that the press keeps giving her are things like, you know, what are you going to do on day one? Day one? She's like on day 1,000 right now, isn't she? I mean, what the heck? How about, what is it you want to do different? That's what you want to say. But no, the press is doing what they can to sort of help her distance herself from Joe Biden, except I will give Dana Bash props on this in the interview. She asked about her connectivity to policies from the Biden-Harris administration. It's not all Harris-Waltz. Biden-Harris is still the thing right now. And the policies that you and I are experiencing are theirs. And the idea of a day one? Day one? What's wrong with day now? You're in office right now. You got something to do? Do it. Let's talk about the economy. Big Rig, I'm going to call for audio clip number 4 here momentarily. So the economy, depending upon which poll you're on, the economy or the border are the top two issues in the nation right now. They resonate. People care deeply. I think the economy has most recently edged ahead of border, but they're both still big, big deals. But that being said, let's hear what she has to say about whether or not Bidenomics has been successful. Go ahead on audio clip number 4, Big Rig.
What you say to voters who do want to go back when it comes to the economy specifically, because their groceries were less expensive, housing was more affordable when Donald Trump was president?
Well, let's start with the fact that when Joe Biden and I came in office, during the height of a pandemic, we saw over 10 million jobs were lost. We were all tracking the numbers. Hundreds of people a day were dying because of COVID. The economy had crashed. In large part, all of that because of mismanagement by Donald Trump of that crisis. When we came in, our highest priority was to do what we could to rescue America. And today, we know that we have inflation at under 3%. A lot of our policies have led to the reality that America recovered faster than any wealthy nation around the world. But you are right. Prices, in particular for groceries, are still too high. The American people know it, I know it, which is why my agenda includes what we need to do to bring down the price of groceries. For example, dealing with an issue like price gouging.
Okay, you heard a lot. Let me break this down for you. She's asked about groceries, and she's asked, and this is a good question, there are people that want to go back to the way things were. And she didn't mean back to the way things were in your first year in office. What she's saying is there are people that want to go back, Dana Bash said it, to the way things were before you were elected. They want to know they can buy groceries at 2019 prices. They want to know that they can go back to an economy where their credit cards were not soaring and interest rates were not high and inflation was not at epic levels. And she comes in, Kamala Harris does, and immediately begins to deflect. Well, you know, I just like to point out that we had an economy that had been mismanaged by my predecessor, Donald Trump. And are you kidding me with this? The economy was booming under Trump. Anybody who says otherwise is defying the actual metrics. I don't mean like sentiments, metrics. It's like telling your accountant they got your tax figures wrong. Well, they can recompute it, but they may come back with the same number. Well, that's the way it works in the economy. The numbers are what the numbers are unless you fake what the numbers are. For her to say they were mismanaged and that she's satisfied, let's be honest, we're at 3% unemployment. Or no, I'm sorry, 3% inflation. 3%? It was 1.6% when you got elected. And within about a year and a half of you being elected, it soared to 9%. It was a 40-year high. The economy was crushed. But at least she admits the prices are still too high. All right, I got one more of these. We'll wrap it up in the next segment. Take some of y'all's text messages. Woo! Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right on this Friday, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about this one. I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. And I mean to say this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, I'm going to wrap up this segment on the old Kamala, new Kamala, and I call it that because there were so many times when she would lay claim to things as being different than they were before and yet still talk about what they were before as if she was proud of what they had been, even though she wants to do something new. And you just look at it and go, who are you? What do you stand for? Well, there's one place, and I believe it's in this last clip we're going to play, when she talks about how her values have not changed. But you're still making changes to your policy, which tells me you just don't make decisions based upon principle. I believe one thing, but I'm doing another. You understand that. I believe what I believe, but I've got to do another. That's not principled leadership. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hey, Big Rig, I'm going to call for audio number 5. So let's go ahead and get that one queued up. And listen, she is... all the things that we have experienced with inflationary spending, with the economy getting wrecked, prices going up, the energy sector becoming energy dependent, not independent, a lot of it stems from the Inflation Reduction Act, which, by the way, she cast the deciding vote on as the president of the Senate. That's a big, hairy deal. That basically means that the reason why we have all that inflationary spending and energy dependence and all that is in part because of her. Well, she was asked about this. Do you still support those things, to include fracking? Here's her answer. Audio clip number 5, man. Go ahead and play it.
Generally speaking, how should voters look at some of the changes that you've made, that you've explained some of here in your policy? Is it because you have more experience now and you've learned more about the information? Is it because you were running for president in a Democratic primary? And should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're saying now is going to be your policy moving forward?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed. You mentioned the Green New Deal. I have always believed, and I have worked on it, that the climate crisis is real, that it is an urgent matter to which we should apply metrics that include holding ourselves to deadlines around time. We did that with the Inflation Reduction Act. We have set goals for the United States of America and by extension the globe around when we should meet certain standards for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, as an example. That value has not changed.
Okay. I don't know what has happened. I will say this. I just caught that. Deadlines around time. Big Rig, correct me if I'm wrong, but usually deadlines are all about time. You get things done by a certain time. That's the deadline.
Yeah, this is a redundant statement.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Deadlines around time. That was a little word salad-y. But she's running for president. And I love the fact, though, that Dana Bash did kind of imply, have you made changes because you've, I don't know, learned something? Or is it because you're running for president on the Democrat ticket? Which is like saying you made your decisions based on politics, not policy. And her response is, the most important thing is, let's be clear, she says, my values have not changed. Okay, so what she just told me is, your values have not changed, but you're being asked about policies that have changed, which means you don't make your policies based upon your values. You're willing to change what you do despite how you say you believe. That's like, do as I say, not as I do. Or is it just the other way around? Do as I do, not as I say. I don't know. The end result of this is the Green New Deal is what brought us massive spending. The Green New Deal, the Inflation Reduction Act, which did nothing to reduce inflation. And she went on to say, I got a written version of the quote here. She says, and to do that, we can do what we have accomplished thus far. What? And to do that, we can do what we have accomplished thus far. The Inflation Reduction Act, she says. What we have done to invest, by my calculation, over probably the next 10 years, investing in a clean energy economy. What she just told me was she wants to do more like this. Just saying. Wants to do more like this. Like, holy cow, she's not done. She needs more spending because, you know, Chicken Little and the sky is falling. Look, as a conservative, This interview told me a lot. As a liberal, I'm sure somebody listening to it's going, oh, good. She didn't really screw up real bad. It wasn't like ridiculous. It wasn't good either, though. She's lost. There are pundits on CNN and others who are a little distraught that it was not better than it was. And again, the optics. You had a 18-minute edited, pre-recorded interview where you sat there with someone sitting next to you because it looked like you needed moral support, and you wore dumpy looking clothes, and you were kind of slumped down, haggard looking at the far side of a table, which made you look small in an otherwise dark room with bad lighting. I don't know who set this thing up. It's almost like she was like somebody punked her when she went up there and did this. All that to say, as a conservative, I would love for her to have had big mistakes and more word salad. But nothing in it scared me. In fact, plenty there for Trump to use in the upcoming debate on September 10th. But the reality is, liberals, the only thing they got out of this was, whew, she did better than Biden. Well, y'all, the bar was so low. All she had to do was not lose her place and say, we finally beat Medicare and it was going to be okay. So there's that. All right, let me take a few text messages and wrap this thing up. Dorothy from Elkmont just says, chameleon. Yes, indeed. Shorty from Anderson, Alabama says, hey, Phil, I like your thoughts on this. How can any Democrat or anybody in the right mind clap and cheer as the entire United States of America watched Tampon Tim tug on his autistic son forcefully at the DNC? I feel bad for that young man's home life. I do, too. I'm concerned about that. Now, somebody said, I don't know if it's true, somebody said that his son, who is autistic, has special needs, was about to walk into a teleprompter and he was sort of stopping him before he did. I don't know. It didn't look good, though. It was a bad look. It really was. David from Bucky's says, Phil, our current administration is playing the same old democratic song. They just changed the name. It's all Trump's fault. Yep, they sure are. JT Lacey Springs says, you cut through the poop with Kamala. She's a wolf campaigning to sheep, promising to become a vegetarian if she's elected.
That's my favorite comment of the day.
That, give us some applause on that one. That one is JT Lacey Springs once again gets applause on his text saying, you cut through the poop with Kamala. She's a wolf campaigning to sheep, promising to become a vegetarian if she's elected. That's good. That is good. Good job. Man, you're like winning the sound effects wars today. Victor on the line? Victor from Huntsville's on line one. Let me get that for the break. Hey, man, how are you?
I'm good. So, hey, it's Victor Lima. If you play that clip again of just Dana asking a question about why she's changing her position,
yeah,
you'll notice that one of the excuses Dana provides her is it because you're running as a candidate in a Democrat primary? Like, no, she never ran as a candidate in a Democrat primary. In fact, nobody's ever voted for her.
That's a
but nobody
point.
Picked up on that. Nobody said anything about that.
That's a great point. You know, you're right. In fact, I don't know if this has ever happened before. I mean, this is like the shot never fired. She is literally running on no vote support. That's incredible. You're right. And Dana got that all wrong. I didn't even catch that, man. Great, great call.
Play it again. Play it again, Phil.
Thanks, Victor. Appreciate you, man. Have a great weekend. Wow. Yeah. Victor Lima calling in from Huntsville. But she's right. I think it did say that. I recall that.
Do you want to hear it again?
Just the opening. Yeah, let's play the opening real quick. Was it a clip 5? I think it was. Yeah.
Generally speaking, how should voters look at some of the changes that you've made, that you've explained some of here in your policy? Is it because you have more experience now and you've learned more about the information? Is it because you were running for president in a Democratic primary? And should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're...
She did say that. You're running for president in a Democrat primary. There's no primary. She's been coronated. She was christened to be the Democrat top of the ticket. Wow. Great call, Victor. Good job, man. All right, let me get a few more text messages before the break, and we'll put a wrap on this one. Mike from Coxie says, so I've noticed a couple of times you using the phrase holy cow when in conversation about Kamala. The word cow is, well, your text messed up a little bit, but says is something can see, but holy not so much. Okay. Oh, I see what you're doing. Okay. I got you, Mike. Thanks. Jeff from Indiana says, Phil, I believe Kamala when she says that her values haven't changed. That's the only true statement she's put out. Everything else is a lie. Point well taken, Jeffro. Jack from Ardmore said, she is driving me crazy by lying about saying Trump crashed the economy. It was a worldwide pandemic. Is she that stupid or lying to convince uninformed voters? Yes. To all of the above. Jeff from Athens, it's the 3 G's, groceries, gas, and gangs. Hey, you know what? That's Jeff from Athens. That could be a bumper sticker right there. Jay from Legtown. He's Jay from Legtown is in the pick'ems now. John from Huntsville, you'll be glad to know. What else have I got here? Hang on a second. I'm going to scroll back down. Badger from Athens says, I may have missed it before game day. Can we get the right side fantasy football info password again? Well, I think John from Huntsville may have just said something. Let's see what he said. John from Huntsville, let's see, where'd he go? 1669, wasn't it? Yep, it was 1699. I'm sorry, 1699 is the password to join the Right Side Ruffian Pick'ems. So if you want to do it, go do it. Yahoo, Right Side Ruffian Fantasy Football Pick'ems, password 1699. All right, Big Rig, take me to a break, brother. We'll do that. We'll come right back. I'm going to go ahead and switch gears. We're going to move on to Israel and Iran, and I'll take a few more text messages to close things out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.